Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today on the show. Today we're going to talk a little about continuous soybeans. So if you want to raise nothing but soybeans, how do you accomplish that and still make money and do well? I realize lots of people are in crop rotation, but we're going to talk about raising just one crop, at least for the foreseeable future. There may be reasons why you want to do this. Maybe dollars out a little bit better for you. Maybe it just works out in terms of your timing or cutting expenses. I know there were a lot of bankers this last year that said, hey, I'd prefer you to plant soybeans as opposed to corn just because it's a lot cheaper to put in the ground. I don't know what it is, but whatever the reason, we want to talk to you about being successful with continuous soybeans today. As always, though, we are happy to take your phone call and talk about anything going on your farm. And we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a minute as well. If you've got a question for us that you'd like us to answer in the mailbag, if you don't want to call in, you can certainly email us, radio@agphd.com, or you can send me a note on Twitter, @AgPhdMedia. Or Brian Hefty. All right, so with continuous soybeans, let me give you a couple of things there, and then we'll get right into the Ag PhD mailbag. On our own farm, we have in the past done continuous soybeans mainly because we were forced to. So when we had drainage issues, couldn't plant until later, we said, too late to plant corn. Let's just keep planting soybeans. So I think our record is 7 years in a row of planting soybeans. Probably the there are a number of reasons why people want to rotate crops, as I'm sure you're well aware. But in terms of raising continuous soybeans, it absolutely can be done. And you can still leave your ground in good shape, because that gets to be one of the concerns too, like building soil organic matter. It can absolutely be done with continuous soybeans. You don't have to have corn or wheat or even cover crops in that rotation. And you can still build organic matter, but you'd have to drastically reduce your tillage. Keep in mind that soybeans have roughly 1/5 the root mass of corn, which means you're going to have a lot more challenging time creating organic matter, because most of the organic matter in soil comes from root mass decaying. So when you have 1/5 with soybeans, it is certainly more challenging, but like I say, it can be done. In terms of the fertility side, so a lot of people will talk about not applying much for fertilizer with soybeans. I'm not a big believer in that at all. If you look at the crop removal charts, soybeans need a lot of nutrients, especially potassium. So if you were in a corn-soybean rotation versus if you planted soybeans 2 years in a row, the number one nutrient that you have to apply more of for soybeans is going to be potassium, okay? And it might be quite a few more pounds of potassium. A little less phosphorus. Obviously, you know, you shouldn't need nitrogen, or if you do, it's only a little bit of nitrogen that you have to apply, so no real big deal there. For the most part, many of the micronutrients, it's going to be less with soybeans than it is with corn, but with potassium, that's the big thing. You got to get out there. Soybeans need a crazy amount of K. Beyond that, I would say we just have to be concerned about soybean cyst nematode, sudden death syndrome, iron deficiency chlorosis, sclerotinia white mold, all the diseases and basically issues that show up in soybeans, especially when you start raising continuous soybeans. Brown stem rot's another one that I'd mention. Now, you can manage through all those things, and we'll talk about that a little bit on the show today, but certainly there are some challenges, but we do have a number of people that we work with that are raising continuous soybeans and having great success. All right, well, right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag. Lots of great questions coming in today. Here's one of my favorites so far. This one's from Chuck. He says, my local supplier is quoting liquid 32% nitrogen at $215 per ton for next spring, which is about $35 a ton less than last spring. Do you feel this is a good time to lock in supplies for 2021? Or what do you think? Thanks for your opinion. Chuck from Nebraska. Anyway, Chuck, I would say this. I was, as a matter of fact, just reading a report on fertilizer pricing this morning. Phosphorus has gone up a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. Everything else is down from last year. And there is a fair amount of supply when it comes to nitrogen, but you just never know. My feeling is you're going to see corn acres go up quite a bit next year. So there's going to be a fair amount of nitrogen used. And I believe that the nitrogen price could end up going up. I don't know any more than the next guy, but I'll say this. Nitrogen prices have been tied to commodity prices. We've seen commodity prices start to really come up in the last month. If they continue that way, and there's a lot of talk about that. By the way, I think ethanol usage in 2021 will be the highest it's ever been because people want to social distance. They're going to continue that for a while. I mean, at least for the first few months of 2021. They don't want to be on a plane. They don't want to be in a bus. They don't want to be in a train. And they don't want to carpool. So what's all that mean? That means they're going to use a crazy amount of gasoline. And that, and then correspondingly, they'll use a lot of ethanol. I think the corn price is going to be higher, which is going to drive nitrogen prices up. So yes, I do think now is a good time to buy. One of the things you always have to look at too is what's the downside risk? What's the worst possible thing that can happen? And if you can afford the worst possible thing that can happen, then I think you got your answer. I would probably be doing something. Next one here is Steve in Kansas. He says, can trifluralin be used as a preplant before winter wheat? Also, are there any rotational restrictions going back to soybeans after the winter wheat crop has been harvested? Well, rotation to soybeans, no. Trifluralin's labeled in soybeans, so that's no problem at all. But putting trifluralin on in front of wheat, no. I would not recommend that ever. Now, there have been guys that have seeded the wheat. Then they put the trifluralin on, hoped for rain immediately after because, you know, trifluralin evaporates right away. And they've gotten by with that in some cases. But it's hard on the wheat. I wouldn't do that. We've got cheap options. So Prepare is really good if you want to talk about grass control and a lot of different grasses. And it's really inexpensive, $3-4 an acre. You've got Sharpen for broadleaves if you wanted to use that. That's $8 to $10 an acre. So early post, you have Zidua, or I should say late pre, maybe even into early post. You could go with something like Zidua, a group 15, to give you some more grass control. But no, I'm not going to use the trifluralin because it'll be too hard on the wheat. All right, we'll talk a little about soybeans coming up next here on Ag PhD Radio. And if you'd like to call in, again, the number is 844-44-AG-PHD or send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here. Today on the show, we're talking about continuous soybeans. If you've got any questions for us, if you'd like to talk about that topic or anything else happening on your farm, I'd love to take your phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743, or send me an email, radio@agphd.com. All right, so first on the show today, we've got our friend Greg. He is a farmer down in Nebraska, and he is a continuous soybean farmer. Greg, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Brian, and enjoying the midsummer weather we're experiencing, even though the calendar is switched to fall. It's in the mid-80s, and I think tomorrow they say almost 90 degrees here in northeast part of the state.
Yeah, we aren't quite that warm, but we're close. And, you know, the only problem with that, Greg, is we are so bone dry here, we've actually had some combine fires. It's been ridiculous for us. So hopefully you're not dealing with the same thing. Have you started harvest?
Yeah, in fact, I started on the 15th, which I'm not sure if it's a record, but it's probably pretty close, record early, that is.
Yep.
You know, everything dried up nicely, especially on those early beans, where I think the first field I pulled into was right at 11%. They were much drier than I even thought.
Yeah.
And I've been able to find beans that are ready here every day since. It's just been one of those harvest windows where everybody's active. I've even seen some corn being taken out, which is very early. But you're right, I'd like to see maybe a rain here and dampen things up a little bit, prevent some of those fires, hopefully.
So, Greg, we're talking about continuous soybeans today. What are your top two or three tips that you've got for somebody who, let's say, has been in a corn-soybean rotation and says, for whatever reason, I just want to raise soybeans for the next 2 or 3 years?
Sure. Well, I say that continuous soybeans aren't for everyone, but it will work, I think, for most everyone if they take some precautions and take some aggressive steps towards growing the very best crop that they can. I always look to, first and foremost anymore, just feeding that crop, getting it all the nutrients that it needs. And I've been continuous soybeans for 30 years. This is my 30th year, so
wow.
Beyond two or three even. I used to select those varieties, and probably the number one tip I would say even 15 years ago is get the highest yielding variety you can with a good defense package. And that's still very important to me, Brian, but right now I've really come around to fertility, soil fertility, paying close attention to all my soil analysis reports, and taking a hard look. If the pH is not correct, then fix that. And to be honest, a lot of the things that I've learned and also put into place on my farm, I've gained from the Ag PhD soil clinics that you and Darren have conducted down through the years. They're very helpful, and I would encourage all listeners to attend one of those, get some information, and that will help you grow a good soybean crop.
Awesome, thanks. When it comes to specific nutrients, what was the one or two on your farm that you said, ooh, I got to do more of that?
Well, last year, after I got my soil test information back, I saw that I was very low on manganese. I had low levels, and we want to get those levels up. And my readings were even sometimes in the single digits, which, you know, is something that you can correct. But yet, it was almost alarming. And manganese is very important to plant health and reproduction, of course, as all those trace and micronutrients are. So that's something that I could fix. Interesting, a couple of years ago, I saw the fact that, well, I've never put copper on my fields ever that I can ever remember.
Yep.
And I put a pound of copper on everywhere, and that's something you can fix for probably the next 20 years. And so
right.
Some of these things, have a long life, such as copper. Other things, such as boron, which is very important, is more highly leachable. And those things, you just need to apply consistently and put it towards your soil test, because that's the best information that anyone can have on their farm, is looking hard at that soil analysis report and then following those steps.
Have you had any issues with soybean cyst nematode or sclerotinia white mold? Because those are the two big things in my area for a guy who wants to go continuous soybeans that he's probably going to be worried about, SCN and white mold.
Exactly, and I test for SCN quite regularly, and delighted to find that I just don't have it. It's, I think, the highest number egg count was maybe 30 to 50, which is next
good.
To nothing.
Yep.
I think it helps because I'm no-till, and so I'm not dragging field cultivator equipment or discs
sure.
or anything like that through from field to field.
Yep.
That might help some. I always plant SCN-resistant varieties, and I think that also helps too. Regarding the white mold, yes, that is a disease that really, you know, is affecting and sometimes takes those yields down drastically. If anyone should have white mold, it probably should be me. I drill in 10-inch rows and continuous beans, you think that would be a nice pocket. However, I've escaped that so far, although you don't have to go too far west up into Antelope County and those places. They're about 40, 60 miles north and west of me. White mold is a severe problem, and they're trying to address it with maybe wide rows, rotations, and things like that.
All right. Well, hey, Greg, these are great tips that you've given us today. We really appreciate it. And best of luck to you down there during harvest.
Well, thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. And keep up the good work at Ag PhD.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Good talking to you. Let's go next out to Pennsylvania. We got Kevin on with us. He is a farmer out there. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
Excellent. So we're talking about continuous soybeans today, and I understand you've raised some continuous soybeans. What any big differences you can tell us in terms of managing that continuous bean ground as opposed to when you rotate?
Well, for my particular operation, managing it nutrient-wise, the gentleman before me touched on some of that, and, P and K, obviously, we're looking at, but as far as micronutrient, boron was something we were lacking.
Yep.
And tried to combat it with that, and we've seen some success. So, we went out and spread some of that, and I think that helped. The other thing, you guys have talked about white mold and so forth. This year, we haven't seen any of that. Most of what we see is, weather-related, but we're planting on 30-inch rows, which, sometimes I think it's kind of tough because you're not getting that canopy.
Yep.
Other times I think it's a blessing because you're not seeing that white mold as much.
Right.
And, if you see a little bit of it, well, okay, you can get in there with some fungicide and things of that nature. But
sure.
30-inch rows have been really good.
Talking about the boron, the P, the K, are you broadcasting all those or how are you applying the fertilizer?
Yeah, we're broadcasting granular, obviously. So that's our method right now. We're not opposed to trying something different, but right now that seems to work for us.
So what else have you found really helps you in this continuous soybean ground? Anything else that you're doing different, especially compared to where you rotate?
Well, nothing else really other than trying to do some tiling. That's been a big thing, even here in Pennsylvania. Think, well, you guys got a lot of hills, but you'll have water coming right out of those hills, and where you just don't think it would. You think it'd be well drained, and then we do have some farms that are flat, and just trying to get that water table to where it should be, and I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. We also have hills where we farm, yet we tile in almost every field. We don't have to pattern tile or anything, kind of like you're talking about. When you got hills, you got some natural drainage. But boy, once we started putting tile in, we just found our bean yields going up, up, and up. Beans need a lot of air in that soil because you're trying to fix nitrogen with those beans, and they can't do it if there's no air in the soil. So, yep, I agree with you 100%. Any last comments you got for us here, Kevin?
Yeah, well, maybe just some questions about, sure. To you. How have you guys been doing as far as corn and beans with the weather? I don't know. I hadn't been paying attention to what was happening in the Dakotas this summer, but we were in quite a drought from July on here.
Yeah, same thing for us. We're in the severe drought area. And now, granted, we had great rain up until July 6th. So, and we had good subsoil moisture going into the year. We're off probably 10, 20 bushels on corn, and we're off 5 to 10 bushels on beans because we have pretty good ground and we've built it up with fertility. On the sand or ground that isn't built up with fertility, then, it's a disaster.
Right on. Yeah. Well, that's, nothing anybody can do about that. Pray for perfect conditions next year. Right?
Yep, that's for sure. Well, hey, Kevin, great talking to you today. Best of luck during harvest.
Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks. All right, we'll continue talking about soybeans right after this here on Ag PhD Radio.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the End Zone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio, talking a little soybeans right now. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in our next segment, though. If you've got a question for us, just send it in, radio@agphd.com. Right now, though, we're going to go back to the phone lines. We've got Horst Bonner with us. He is from up in Ontario, Canada, and with the Ontario Ministry of Ag, Food, and Rural Affairs. Horst, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Good afternoon to you.
All right, so continuous soybeans, what are maybe your top two or three tips that you would have for a farmer who comes in to you and says, you know what, Horst, I would like to raise soybeans, nothing but soybeans, for the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, I think realistically, you have to approach the issue with respect to just the fact that those beans will yield about 10% less the first year, and then another 10% less the following year. And then it kind of settles out in terms of the yield expectation. So I like to set the bar there just so people have realistic expectations. And of course, that's if we don't have serious insect or disease or nematode flare-up. So to answer your question directly, the things that we talk about are no-till in the fall, right? If your ground is well drained, you don't need any tillage in the fall.
Yep.
And that, of course, leaves some of those sclerotia on the surface if you have white mold and they die out better.
Yep.
So that would be one thing. But then in the spring, I like to do a little bit of minimal tillage that breaks up some of those root channels for the next soybean crop. And we've had pretty good luck with that. 3-4 bushel response when we do minimal tillage on soybeans following soybeans, more so than soybeans following corn. And then, you know, you get into the stuff like you got to put the good seed treatments on because, of course, we're always worried about more disease pressure when you get into these multiple years of soybeans, right?
Yep.
So that's an absolute must. And then, of course, the other really obvious one is you have to think about what varieties you're choosing with respect to the genetic package and disease, insect, and nematode resistance or tolerance at least, right? Those kind of questions, because you don't want to grow the same variety year after year, that's for sure.
Now, you mentioned 10% less yield the first year and another 10% the next year. Why? What's causing this yield loss?
Ah, that is a very good question. So the, you know, scientists have all kinds of answers in terms of possibly a little more disease, possibly, you know, some sort of effect with respect to an additional benefit when you have other crops that we're really not sure exactly what they are. But at the end of the day, we kind of attribute that to mostly diseases and insects. But the truth of the matter is that is based on trial data. And we have some of our own that we've been doing for 10 years. That's kind of how it works out. And at the end of the day, we don't have all the answers as to why that is. I think it's partly just because of the fact that soybeans are pretty tough on the soil, right? They remove a lot of nutrients, and then they're really hard on soil structure. And we are reducing organic matter, right? And there's something about that that just reduces yield. I personally don't think there's any way around those issues, that 10% and that 10%. But keep in mind, I mean, I was just in a field this morning in that trial, you know, where we've been growing soybeans now for 10 years in this particular trial, I think those beans will go over 60 bushels this year, right? So it's 10% of what, right?
Yep.
That's the question.
Yep.
Now the good, like where we have had a corn, soybean, winter wheat rotation, those beans, I think, will be over 70 bushels this year, right?
Sure. Well, Horst, we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show. I'm going to get to it in the next segment because I agree with you. Nutrients, soil structure, and organic matter, we've talked about a little bit already, but I'm going to spend a little more time with it later in the show. So thanks for bringing those things up. Again, we've been talking to Horst Bonner. He is with the Ontario Ministry of Ag, Food, and Rural Affairs. Horst, thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Have a great day.
Yep,
bye.
You too. All right, next on the show, we've got Mike Staton. He is with Michigan State University. Mike, how are things for you out in the state of Michigan today?
They're good, Brian. They are. We've got beautiful sunshine, a lot of soybean harvest going on right now.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that about soybean harvest. Are you learning anything, and especially with our topic, continuous soybeans, what do you have for tips for us today?
Well, I would say I did chime in just a little bit and listen to some of Horst's comments, and I do agree 100%. There's several factors that are going to be downside, and they're all long-term factors with planting soybeans after soybeans. We're going to have increased disease pressure. I don't know if Horst talked about that very much, but there is very many soil-borne diseases that are going to be aggravated by a continuous soybean rotation.
Yep.
That'd be soybean cyst nematode, SDS, white mold, Phytophthora, and Pythium.
Yep.
Are all aggravated by that condition. Another one that I don't know if Horst addressed this, but is Mark Lau, the weed specialist at Ohio State University, had some interesting comments. He thinks that the shorter rotation actually increases the development of herbicide-resistant weeds, which is one of the biggest issues facing soybean producers.
Yep.
And particularly mare's tail and the pigweed species. So that's one to really factor in. And then the one that I just heard Horst and you talk about was the decline in soil quality. And I agree, and I've got some numbers there. I don't know if you guys talked about numbers, but
no.
Corn and wheat produce so much more residue.
Yep.
They're able to produce so much more residue than soybeans do.
Agreed.
You know, twice as much.
Yep.
Basically twice as much. on a tons per acre basis.
Yep.
And the difference is they provide so much more carbon. Well, why is carbon important? It feeds our microbes. And the microbes are what, of course, glue our soils together and improve soil structure. So it can be a really big issue. Depends on soil type, depends on your existing organic matter, those kind of things. But to me, that is a long-term effect why we want to keep a good rotation going.
One of the things Horst said is year one, or really it'd be year two of raising soybeans, 10% less yield. Year three, another 10% less in yield, and then things stabilize. Are you seeing that dramatic of a yield penalty for planting continuous soybeans?
No, but we've not done that kind of research here at Michigan State. Probably the other data set that's probably as strong or maybe even stronger, I hate to say that with Horst, but would be from University of Wisconsin.
Yep.
Joe Lauer was there and worked on a really long established database, and then Sean Connolly has sort of inherited that. And they just have a tremendous long history. So that's the best research I think that's out there, is from the University of Wisconsin. I was looking at Joe Lauer's data pre-Sean, and he's showing, I'm just looking at it right now, so if he's looking at a corn-soybean rotation, he's showing it about an average of a 45 bushel yield, but that's a long, that's many years ago.
Yep.
And if he went to first year of soybeans, or no, let's say second year soybeans,
yep, second year,
it would be about the same. He's not showing a real serious decline. In that first year, but when you go to a second year, then you do start to lose some. And he's saying actually after the fourth year, it's the same as growing continuous soybeans.
Sure.
You're giving up quite a bit. So it's pretty consistent with what Horst is saying, but maybe not quite as dramatic. As far as recommendations go, Brian, that's where it gets really tricky. And I did catch some of Horst's recommendations, and I couldn't agree anymore. Variety selection is huge. It really is,
yep.
Especially probably for the disease side of things, the soybean cyst nematode things. One of the biggest things that we have to do is we have to protect the Peking source of resistance. We have to make sure that that's sustainable. There's some recent research at MSU. Dr. Quintanilla has produced this, that technology, that source of resistance breaks down faster if you repeatedly use it than the PI88788 source of resistance. So that's really important.
Yep. All right.
Definitely rotate your sources.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, great stuff. Again, we've been talking to Mike Staton with Michigan State University. Mike, thanks a lot for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
You bet. All right, right after this break, we're going to talk through some of the issues that Horst and Mike brought up in this segment. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good.
That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5EC. Manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here. We're talking continuous soybeans. Before we get back to the Ag PhD mailbag, and I do have a ton of questions I want to get to today in the mailbag, I just wanted to address some of the things in the last segment that got brought up. And especially as soon as you hear, well, 10% yield loss in my first year of continuous beans. So in other words, that'd be year two of soybeans. You raised soybeans last year, raise them this year. 10% yield loss. The next year, another 10% yield loss. You'll hear people talk about the same thing with continuous corn. Now, I'm not going to dispute the fact that in many cases there will be yield loss. But what I want to tell you is you can manage through a lot of those issues. It just requires a different level of management. We talk to people about this all the time. Just for example, no-till versus strip-till versus conventional till. Well, if you're going to go from conventional till to no-till and you're going to do everything else the same way other than you stop tilling, it's going to be a disaster. It's not going to work. You can't manage the farm the same way. Just like if you're going to raise continuous soybeans versus you've always been in a corn-soybean rotation, if you're going to manage the soybeans the same way you manage them in a corn-soybean rotation, it's going to be a disaster. And you are probably going to have a 10% yield loss that first year of continuous soybeans and another 10 the next year. So you've got to look at, why am I having the problems? So weed control, and you know this Mike Staten brought up, increased chance for resistance. There is increased chance for resistance because what we find is a lot of people get comfortable using the same herbicides. And even us agronomists are at fault with this, because a lot of times when farmers would walk into my office, and still do, and I go, well, okay, well, what did you use last year and are you happy with that? Well, yeah, it's worked good. I like that. And okay, well, let's do the same thing again. Right? Well, if you're going to do the same thing again, then you have much more chance for resistance, most likely. We want to see lots of different modes of action used out there. That's going to help you on that end of things. Now, in terms of these issues, nutrients, soil structure, and organic matter, I don't worry about any of those three at all, quite frankly, because we can manage through those fairly easily. Nutrients, I mentioned this earlier in the show, potassium is number one. You can mostly run your same corn fertility program with soybeans, except for you're obviously going to cut back on nitrogen, but you got to really up that potassium. In a lot of cases, you double the potassium. It's a lot more. In terms of soil structure, well, that's where guys go to reduce tillage or even no-till. We talked to Greg, the farmer down in Nebraska, who's been doing continuous soybeans for 30 years now, and it's worked great. And he actually is building soil organic matter, by the way, but that's all because of no-till. So his structure is good and his organic matter is good. But when you go to continuous soybeans, you're going to want to cut back on tillage compared to in a corn-soybean rotation. And then that can help solve those issues. So you really can manage through it, but you've got to make some changes. The two big things, and I brought this up earlier, white mold and soybean cyst nematode. Those are the tough ones. So with cyst nematode, I thought Mike Staten brought up a great point. There is Peking out there. There are two types of resistance that you can find, SCN resistance. The Peking, we're getting some better yielding varieties now. That's been the reason most people haven't used that. But with the better yielding varieties, you might have a tendency to go that way, and you say, well, I'm not having resistance with this other trait. Let's use the Peking. That's fine, but you still want to rotate that. Okay, you don't want to be using that every single year. But yeah, with SCN, I do get very concerned about it. There are some nematicides out there, but let's face it, most soybean farmers aren't using those. So it's really the SCN-resistant beans. And the other big thing is just making sure you've reduced all other stresses. If you reduce your other stresses, then the bean plant is more tolerant of SCN, soybean cyst nematode. When it comes to sclerotinia white mold, we have about 10 things that we commonly talk about in terms of how you reduce white mold issues out in fields. You want shorter beans. You go to wider rows. You make sure you have really good soil manganese levels. You use fungicides. You use some contans to kill the sclerotia. I mean, lots of things that can be done, and certainly you can go no-till, and that leaves the sclerotia on the soil surface, gives you even more chance to have fewer issues and to get your contans that'll kill the sclerotia to work. So anyway, if you want to raise continuous soybeans for whatever reason, just make sure you are changing things a little bit compared to how you normally plant soybeans and produce soybeans in a rotation. It's different, but it absolutely can be successful. All right, well, jumping back to the Ag PhD mailbag, let's see, we had a Janelle, we're handling that call tomorrow. All right. So I had one I was going to address, but we had a caller call in and then had to go, so he's going to call back tomorrow. Let's handle this one. This is a good one. Kevin from New Jersey says, guys, I'm a regular listener. Well, actually says, howdy, Hefties. I'm a regular listener of the show and also viewer on YouTube. You guys have taught me a lot, to say the least. Just want to say a quick thank you for what you do and the great info that you put out. We had an issue in beans this year. We're thinking it's herbicide damage, but we want to figure out, is it the Zidua Pro that we put on this spring, or was it the Acuron we put on last year? So this year, we put on Zidua Pro at 6 ounces, and last year, we put on Acuron at 2.5 quarts, which isn't quite the full rate, and then we use 1 quart of infantry. And basically, he says we can really see the overlaps. All right, Kevin, here's the issue. It's the atrazine from last year primarily. So let's talk about Acuron real quick. Acuron, at the rate you use, 2.5 quarts, you got about 2/3 of a pound of atrazine, which, as long as you don't overlap in your pH, your soil pH is of around 6, you're not going to have any issue with the following year. Now, if you had an 8 pH, you probably would have an issue with that. Atrazine is very sensitive to soil pH. So if your pH is above about a 7.4, you got to really cut that atrazine back. I mean, like a quarter pound or less if you want to rotate to beans. And you can't have overlaps. But here's the problem. You went 2/3 of a pound with the Acuron, and then you put another pound on with that infantry that you use. That's 1.65 pounds. So where you overlapped, that's 3.3 pounds of atrazine. So it's no wonder the plants look like that, and that's what's going on. Where how these triazines will kill stuff. So for example, metribuzin is a triazine. It's labeled in soybeans and it's fine. It's going to be safe to the soybeans in most cases. But if it starts hurting the beans, the leaves will drop off from the bottom. The triazines move only in the phloem, so they only move up. They're going to start at the bottom and work their way up. Okay, they aren't going to immediately go to the top and the growing point. It's going to be the lower leaves that are going to drop off first. Same thing with atrazine. So if you look and you're out there, you're usually losing those bottom leaves first, and then the leaves keep dropping off above that. But anyway, I see your pictures. Looks terrible. It's just you got too much atrazine. The other thing I don't like about Acuron is for that rate you used, that's 5 ounces of Callisto. 5 ounces. Out here where we farm, we're dry. And I don't even want to use 3 ounces of Callisto. I'm so worried about carryover. Plus, in Acuron, you've got another HPPD in there, the bicyclopyrone. So that worries me, and I don't want to use that higher rate. And I'm not saying no one should use that or anything else, and I'm not saying that caused the problem here, but it certainly didn't help. But your main cause is the atrazine. It was just a way too high a rate of atrazine. We have plenty of other weed killers out there. I'd just be cutting back on the atrazine in the future, and then you'll be in good shape. All right, next question. Tambe asks, how frequent do you spray gibberellic acid? Okay, we've talked about gibberellic acid as a plant growth hormone. naturally occurs in plants, but when it's cold, in the spring or the fall, that's when you apply gibberellic acid. So, for example, pasture ground, and you want more growth, you will have extension of those grass plants when you spray that gibberellic acid on. It's very inexpensive. It's $3 to $5 an acre, and you should be able to get a lot more than that in terms of return on tonnage. The other crop we use it quite commonly on gibberellic acid is silage corn. That will make the silage corn taller. We usually, like when we use it on our farm, we get an extra foot of growth. So it's a really big deal. One more quick one before the break. Sean asks, I'm trying to be better with our nitrogen going forward. Are nitrogen stabilizers worth it? Well, look, Sean, I believe nitrogen stabilizers absolutely are worth it when you are far in advance of applying that nitrogen, you're using high rates, and nitrogen's expensive. If you're applying the nitrogen right about the time the crop's going to use it, you're not using a high rate, you got heavier soils, and nitrogen's relatively cheap, then no, a nitrogen stabilizer isn't going to help you out that much. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of your questions.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI-listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Your land is a legacy. A challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
I think I've got 11 questions queued up. This might be a record for me. If in one segment of our show I can get through 11 questions. So I'm going to give it a shot. Here's our first one. Paul asks, what does gypsum do to beneficial fungi? I am a truffle farmer, and I need to protect the tuber melanosporum in a high magnesium soil. The aeration is bad. Oh, I can see that. And we need to get more oxygen into the topsoil profile, but I was advised that gypsum is bad for truffles. Well, look, Paul, I am not a truffle farmer. I am no expert in truffles, but I don't understand how gypsum would be bad for truffles. So let's put it this way. Where we use gypsum is when you have a shortage of both calcium and sulfur. If you only have a shortage of one, just sulfur or just calcium, then gypsum may not be the product for you. And maybe somebody used a whole bunch of gypsum when they didn't need one thing or the other. The other thing that I will tell you is when we talk high magnesium soils, that usually to me indicates we've got heavy ground and very often we have poor drainage. So a lot of times in those types of soils, we're talking about improving drainage with drain tile. So I don't know if you need tile or if you don't, but that obviously could help any crop. And with gypsum, I'm really not too worried about it. The calcium is certainly not going to hurt the truffles. It's just if you had an overload of sulfur, you know, I could see that could be a possibility. But let's keep in mind, too, a lot of people will use gypsum to try to flush certain nutrients that are in excess out of the soil. For example, let's say you have a high sodium soil and you put gypsum out there. If after you have improved your drainage with tile, the sulfate can combine in the gypsum can combine with the sodium to form sodium sulfate. That's a salt that's leachable that will flush out of your soil. Well, let's say somebody had done that and they tried to raise truffles on that ground. Well, yeah, of course, in high sodium soil, everything's going to get hurt. So maybe that's why they're talking about gypsum's bad for truffles. I have no idea. But anyway, I wouldn't get too worried about that. If you want to send us your soil tests, we can look at those and give you some advice from there. Adam had a comment. We were talking about diesel exhaust fluid on a recent episode of Ag PhD. So DEF. And he says, 20% less pollution, 40% more fuel. Thank you, government. I'll leave it at that. Next one here, from Suffix says, I planted soybeans with a low population under 100,000 plants per acre. Since they have many side branches, I'm noticing some of these side branches have snapped off and fell to the ground with many pods on them. Would this be a disease issue or just too heavy from the podding and then they broke off? Well, I would take a look at those plants and see if I feel like they have disease. Also, slice them down the middle and see if you have disease in there. It's certainly possible maybe you have brown stem rot or something like that. But the other big thing is when you say lots of pods and on a branch, I mean, the first thing I'm thinking is, oh, great. But you got to make sure you have enough potassium. We've talked about that a couple times here on our show today with soybean production, but soybeans need so much K, and a lot of it has to do with that stalk and the branch quality. So it very well could be a potassium issue. Also, you could look at copper and manganese, but if you are not finding disease, so you can have an agronomist look at it with you, slice the plants open. If you're not finding disease, odds are very high it's potassium or possibly then copper or manganese. All right, next one here is from Jim, and he says, where can I find your weed catalog so I can stop the weeds on my farm or in my lawn? Jim, I would just say if you search, just do an internet search for whatever weed you're looking for, and then right after that, type in Ag PhD, and we've got so many videos out there that could certainly help you. The other thing that might help you is if you download our free Ag PhD field guide, where Darren and I go through the most common weeds, at least in crops. We don't talk too terribly much about lawns, but some of that information might help you with lawns as well. All right, next one here is from John, and he says, on one of your recent shows, you mentioned some of the other high-yield chasers used fulvic acid to their foliar, or they added fulvic acid to their foliar nutrient applications, but you didn't mention any rates. Could you please share this info with us? And John is from Ontario, Canada. John, I would tell you there are a lot of different products out there. So what we will typically use, we're going to be as low as 6 ounces to as much as a quart, maybe even a gallon, but it all depends on what the concentration of fulvic acid is in there. There aren't a lot of industry standards for fulvic acids and humic acids. And what I would suggest is maybe just try a little bit. We haven't been able to determine whether the dose makes that much difference or not. So maybe just try a real low rate so you aren't spending much money. Give that a shot and see if that will do it for you. And certainly you can try, you know, a little bit higher rate or whatever. But like I say, cost is a big deal. Keep that cost down. Just get a little bit of fulvic acid out there. And we believe that fulvic acid does help nutrients get into plants and gives us just a little bit better performance. All right, next one is from Jeff in New York. He says, hi guys, my son and I farm in Western New York and we're looking to diversify into grain. Where can I get educated on all the government programs available to grain producers, like price supports, grain storage grants, market losses, and especially crop insurance programs? Thanks. We think you are very educational to producers, and thanks for sharing your knowledge. You are an asset to farmers. Thanks a lot for that, Jeff. I would say where I would start is your county farm service agency office. Just go in and talk to them about any of the government programs that are out there. And then you can talk to your local crop insurance agency. Most towns have somebody. Just talk to one of them. The price is pretty regulated, so just about everybody has the same price. And just talk to them about your options in terms of crop insurance. But yes, in the United States, there is crop insurance. I mean, and there are qualifiers, but there is crop insurance that is somewhat subsidized by the government. All right, next one here. Let's see. It's Mama Sparky C says, I just read your comments on Creeping Charlie. We were talking about that recently. And I was going to go back out and apply some herbicide to Creeping Charlie and put on some more Tenacity. But what I did spray earlier with the Tenacity, it turned it white, yet the majority did not die. So what do I do with that? Well, look, I would just say it could very well be rate. Because when we start talking about, and it sounds like a lawn situation, and by the way, Tenacity is an HPPD. It's basically the same thing as Callisto that farmers will use in corn here in the United States. Anyway, with that product, if you don't get enough rate on there, then it is not going to kill that Creeping Charlie. Now, Creeping Charlie's tough. Okay, it's one of the toughest weeds that we fight in lawns. You've got to have the right rate. But the challenge gets to be, people are running out there with backpack sprayers. I'm guessing that's what you did this with, or maybe a little four-wheeler sprayer or something. It's not quite as precise as some of the things we do on crop acres, so I'm guessing there just wasn't enough rate applied. If you got a little higher rate on, I'm assuming it would work. All right, next one here comes from Eric. He says, hey, I know this isn't an agronomic question, but I want to get a job on a farm. I've been driving truck long haul on and off for the past 10 years, but worked on a farm before that. Do you have any suggestions on where I can look? Eric, I would start just talking to farmers in your area. Almost every farmer wants extra help, especially at harvest time, but you just start talking to some farmers in your area and they will, I'm going to assume, give you some good ideas on who you can go work with and for. Next one comes from Steven. He says, first time planting corn. I planted 2 seeds every 9 inches or so. Now the 2 seeds are 6 inches or 3 inches to 6 inches apart. All my seeds came up. Do I have to cull one of the 2 plants that are 3 inches to 6 inches close together? Well, I don't know your row spacing or anything else. You probably don't, but I mean, that's a really good question. You'd have to look at your population. We do have a planting population app. There's a free Ag PhD planting population app that could help you. But I would tell you, if you've got some plants 3 inches apart and other plants 6 inches apart, ideally what we're looking for is all plants equally spaced so they have an equal shot to thrive. Next one, and I don't have a name on this one, but they say, okay, so you guys are talking about organic matter. Now, my question's about legumes. Do they not provide nitrogen for other plants until they're broken down by bacteria? Okay, so when we talk about the legume crops, they will release sugars in the soil. Then bacteria will colonize on the roots and pull nitrogen out of the air, turn it into a form the plant can use, and literally inject it into the plant root. So no, other plants are not going to get that benefit until later, until those first plants break down. Almost made it through all my questions. I had one more, but we're out of time. Anyway, before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, thanks to our guests and anybody who called or wrote in with questions, and thanks to you for listening, and be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.